Hey everyone, welcome to another brand new episode of the show. Today we have Sachin with us. Sachin is a finance professional, an admirer of movies, and a dear friend. And today we are going to talk about one of my all-time favorite and arguably one of the best movies done by Christopher Nolan, The Prestige. Know that there will be a ton of spoilers, so if you haven't watched this movie yet, make sure to watch it and then come back and listen to the entire episode. So without further ado, let's get right into it. I'm Joe and this is Hold My DVD. Sachin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joseph. Hi. I've been listening to your podcast. Yeah. And you say that it's a very interesting movie about every movie that anyone thinks of.
So usually most of them are pretty interesting. So far, there hasn't been a movie that was not interesting, fortunately.
I should have chosen some other movie for you then.
No, this is perfect. This is a great choice.
So according to you, which movie do you consider the best?
By Christopher Nolan?
No, by anyone.
If I had to choose one movie, that'd be really hard. But Interstellar would still be on my top five. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the first one that comes to my mind. Interstellar is definitely up there. Then there's Dark Knight. Then there are some other films like Goodfellas. Have you watched Goodfellas?
No, but I've heard a lot about that movie. But why Interstellar, though? One of my closest friends, Bonnie, he always says that Interstellar is one of the best movies that he have also watched. Even when compared to Prestige and... yeah, other great movies. But the thing about Interstellar is, it's for me, it's just another time travel movie. So if you have seen some other time travel movies like Predestination or Primer, Interstellar doesn't really come up to that level. So what do you find so interesting about Interstellar? I understand that the graphics and everything is just great in Interstellar, the way they present the black hole and spaceships and everything is great, but it's just another time travel movie for me.
Okay, I'll tell you why. So time travel is just one part of what makes Interstellar such a good watch. Like for me, it's the human emotion, specifically love. Because the whole movie is driven by love. Matthew McConaughey goes to the space for the love of his daughter. Mm-hmm. Anne Hathaway, I don't remember what was the name of the character. Yeah. She goes into the space in search for her love. Hoping that he would be able to find her lover. Mm-hmm. And even at the end, everything he does so that he can save his daughter and his daughter's generation. So this and there's this particular sentence that I think it's the exact phrase that used somewhere at some point in the movie. Maybe it's love that transcends all dimensions. Maybe that's something that we have not understood yet. Character played by Anne Hathaway says that at some point. So that's like, even though it's this, it's a movie about all this, you know, intergalactic travel. There's a lot of, you know, black holes, wormholes, there's all sort of stuff. It's like underneath all that, it's human emotion. It's the love that drives each character to do what they do, you know, in order to save, you know, whatever they want to save. So yeah, that's very fascinating for me. Like there's a lot going on. Interstellar travels. There's, you know, a lot about galaxies, there's about, you know, planets, there's wormhole, all that stuff. But even then, they keep that focus on, you know, love and how it's so powerful that it can transcend all dimensions. So that's why, you know, I consider that's one of the best movies.
Okay, I see.
Okay, so coming back to Prestige. So I know it's one of your favorite movies. I think you mentioned that it might be the best movie by Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, not just by Christopher Nolan. It could be one of the best movies that I have ever watched.
Okay,
on par with Predestination and yeah.
Oh right. So do you remember the first time you watched Prestige? Like, how did you came across it? Was it a very long time ago? Was it when you were in school?
I don't remember when exactly I saw it for the first time, but it was, I didn't come across that organically. I was looking for movies by Christopher Nolan because I watched Dark Knight and Interstellar and Inception. I wanted to see more movies directed by Christopher Nolan. And that's how I came across Prestige. And the rating when compared to, when compared to Inception and Interstellar, the rating wasn't as high as those movies.
Right.
So I just gave it a try. And it was, the casting was amazing. So yeah, it was, I just wanted to watch it.
Right.
But only when I watched it, I understood that the movie has so many, it's a movie on very deep level.
Right.
The basic theme of the movie is simple, just sacrificing everything for their passion, which is, well, magic in this case.
Right.
So yeah, that is what made me hooked up with this movie.
So why do you think that's the best movie ever?
It's because it took something very simple. For example, it's not even, it's a passion for a particular art, right? It's a profession,
Right.
and it's art, and it's deception. They're doing magic, which everyone knows is not real.
Right.
So for this simple thing of deception, they are going to such levels. And how he was able to make a full-fledged movie out of this simple idea of sacrificing everything for us. Some people might even call it a stupid passion. It's
Right.
just a magic trick. So that is what, that's why I consider this such a great movie. If you think about
Right.
it, all these magicians that, who are sacrificing their entire lives, who act as if they are someone else, is sacrificing all this for a simple, for one of their tricks.
Yeah.
For example, there is this Chinese man, Chung Li or something. He is sacrificing his life, or he acts as a cripple during his entire lifetime just for that goldfish bowl trick.
Right.
Which the audience knows that it's not real magic. The audience already knows that it's not real magic, but just to pull out this simple trick, he sacrifices his entire life. He acts as a cripple in his entire life.
Right.
And for the transported man, I think the trick is called transported man, right?
Yeah, it's called Transporter Man.
It's called Transporter Man. So for that simple trick, Angier and Alfred, they are sacrificing their lives for this one trick. It's not for the entire show, but just for this one trick, they are sacrificing their entire lives.
Yeah.
So Alfred is sacrificing half of his life for this simple trick. So that is
Right.
why I consider this a very great movie.
This theme of obsession is
yeah,
there
obsession.
throughout the movie. Like initially we see the obsession from Angier, because he is dying to know how Alfred does his tricks. Like at one point, Cutter, the character played by Michael Caine, he says that he just uses a double, but he doesn't believe that, he says that it's too simple. Finally, he goes with the opinion of Mr. Cutter and gets himself a double. And then he performs a trick, which is close to perfect, except for the fact that he is under the stage and he's not able to see the ovation. He's not able to see the audience reaction.
Which means a lot for these magicians.
Exactly.
The simple things means a lot for these people.
And especially for Andrew, right? Like he loves that. He's a special character. Like you can see that he loves that. He loves to see the people's reaction. And even when he's doing that, those
under stage,
tricks successfully,
he takes the ovation.
Yeah, he can't stand it. Like he's still obsessed. I think there's this particular scene where Scarlett Johansson goes, "No, we've done this. Like we should celebrate." But he's upset. Like he wants to find out how Alfred does the trick, because he feels that Alfred is able to receive that ovation or standing ovation, receive that reaction from the audience.
Yeah, unlike
he's
him.
Still obsessed. Yeah, unlike him. Which I found really fascinating. But towards the end, we realized that obsession was there for Alfred as well, because he had sacrificed
living half lives,
entire life for that. That's very fascinating.
Yeah. So the entire movie is about sacrificing for something as simple as a magic trick, which is very interesting for me.
Yeah, but we need to consider other factors as well, right? Like especially the time in which they're living. So it's not just so for at least for Alfred. So he's from a lower class family, but that's not the case with Angier. Like he's an upper class. He's a lord. In fact, magic is just merely a passion for him and an obsession for him. It's not a way to make a living out. But that's not the case for Alfred, because
you're right.
So he's in fact a lord. So he's just doing this so that, for his passion or for because he likes it.
Yeah, he gave up his family name and changed his name. Exactly.
But that's not the case with Alfred. Like Alfred is from a lower working class family, and like not exactly, he doesn't have a family. He's something of an orphan, or like we don't see his family at all.
Yeah, his past is kind of it's not disclosed.
Exactly. His boss is kind of a blur. So he is just trying to make ends meet. He's trying to make a living out of this, like all the tricks that he does. So I think that's a big part of why they do what they do.
But I don't think it's just a livelihood for either of those, because, you know, living half a life is not something that someone would do for a living. He can do multiple other things also. And there are simpler tricks for that.
Right.
And sacrificing two or couple of their fingers just to look same is not something that someone would do to make ends meet.
Right.
I think it's more than just money. It's not in money terms. Especially for Hugh Jackman, it's not about money at all, because he spent a fortune for making this machine from Tesla. Not that he didn't have this trick. He already had this double who was a drunk man.
Yeah.
But he just wanted to make it perfect. So he was willing to spend a fortune on that.
For at least for the character played by Hugh Jackman, I keep forgetting his name. Yeah, Angier. He is dying to know the secret.
Which he already knew, which already Cutter already told him after that Scarlett Johansson was sent to Christian Bale to get his trick. And even Scarlett Johansson said that, "I have seen makeup, I've seen wigs around the tent, which is not actually used. So he's definitely using a double." This was confirmed multiple times by multiple people. But yeah, he thought the trick is so simple that he couldn't believe it.
Right. And there's the other thing as well, right? Like initially, both of them were working together. And there's that past as well, where
his wife died.
So I think that just adds to the obsession and the rivalry that these guys have. Because initially, they were working together. Even then, but they did not like each other. That incident, that accident that took place, which killed Hugh Jackman's wife, that just worsened their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
After that point, all they wanted to do was destroy each other, especially for Angier. Like, he saw the life Alfred was having, and he was so obsessed with it.
He thought it was perfect, but it was not even close.
Yeah.
He thought Alfred had a perfect life, but he didn't know the problems that they were having in everyday lives.
Do you remember the first time you watched the movie and you saw the twist at the end?
Yeah, I remember. I immediately watched the entire movie a second time also to understand it on a full level.
Oh, yeah,
so right after I watched, So right after I finished the movie, I watched it again. Only then you will get you'll understand a lot of things why it is happening. So, for example, every time Alfred's wife would say, whenever Alfred says "I love you" to his wife would say, "Today you don't mean it," and someday he does mean it. So that was because he was not the actual husband.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
every time Hugh Jackman used to Angier, every time Angier used to ask Alfred, which knot did you tie? He says that, "I don't know." Could be because he is the one who didn't tie the knot. It was his brother.
Right.
So these minor details, everything, you would get it only if you watch it for the second time. You would understand the complete picture only if you watch it for the second time.
It's only after you know the twist, after you know the climax, that you see all these tiny details. That's Christopher Nolan leaves kind of breadcrumbs throughout the
the
movie.
Foreshadowing. The movie starts with foreshadowing. For example, the movie starts with Michael Caine asking Alfred's daughter, "Do you want to see a magic trick?" And then he shows this bird in a cage.
Yep.
Yeah, and he shows that he's killing the bird. That's how the trick works. So there would be a bird in a cage, and this cage would be the bird in the cage will be killed.
Right.
And then they'll show another bird to show that that he took the bird out of the cage.
Right.
So this exactly was Angier's trick.
Yeah.
Sacrificing himself every day and replacing himself with a clone.
Right. Yeah, that's very interesting. I did not see, I did not connect the two. Yeah, that's brilliant. I think it's shown towards the beginning of the movie and towards the end of the movie, the same scene.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's
beginning
that's,
and end are the same scene.
Brilliant,
yeah.
Brilliant foreshadowing. And then there's the clues that you mentioned, right? For example, when he's talking with Sarah, whenever he says, "I love her," like, "I love you," then she understands that, you know, you do not mean it. But when we're watching it for the first time, we don't see it. Like, we just ignore that because that doesn't mean anything to us. But it's only when we watch it for the second time that we realize how significant it was.
Yeah. Every single detail, simple detail is connected, and every single detail is important. You know, Cutter used to mention that Alfred is using a double to Angier, right?
Right.
In a particular scene, Cutter says this. The most disappointing trick is that there is no trick.
Right. I can't remember that line.
So I think Angier is saying this. I don't remember who is saying this, but at some point someone says this. Oh yeah, Cutter says this to someone who is going to collect the machine. Okay.
Right.
So after Angier's death, all his equipments were going to this particular lord, right?
Right.
So then Cutter mentioned that with this particular machine, the clone machine, there is no trick, and that is very disappointing that it's real.
Right.
So he says that the most disappointing trick is that there is no trick. And if you think about it, that is what Angier's whole problem with Alfred's trick was. There was no trick. It was just a double. So he couldn't just believe that. It was so disappointing that he wouldn't just accept that truth. That led to everything after that.
I think the exact words Angier uses is that, no, that's too simple.
Yeah.
That can't be it.
Exactly. So if the trick is simple, it's very disappointing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And again, that idea is mentioned in different ways throughout the movie.
Yeah. So Alfred also says, Alfred says to his daughter that never reveal this trick. Because if at the point that you mention this trick, you are nothing.
Yep, yep.
Until then, you are everything. But after the point that you reveal your trick, you are nothing. It's just a boring, plain trick.
Yeah, yeah, that's true as well. And also, I do want to talk about the narrative technique that Nolan uses, because it can get a little bit of confusing.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's diary, past,
two
there's
diaries.
Present, there's two diaries, there is diaries in between, like diaries inside diaries.
Yes, yes, yes. That is another very, very brilliant thing to do. So first, Alfred tries to fool Angier with his diary.
Right.
And then in the end, Angier tries to fool Alfred with his diary.
And it's also happening at the same time.
Yeah. So inside Angier's diary, we get to see Alfred's diary as well. Angier explains Alfred's diary also inside his own diary. Yeah, the way he narrates the story itself is very brilliant. So if you remember this, if you remember, the story starts with Michael Caine showing the bird and stuff to Alfred's daughter, and after that I think the scene is showing Alfred in the jail cell where he's reading Angier's diary.
Yeah, so what happens is that, like, when Michael Caine shows the tricks, and he explains that, you know, a magic trick has three parts. I don't remember the part one. What is the name of the part one? The second part is called The Turn, and the final part is called The Prestige. But
Prestige.
I don't remember the first part. So he explains
that.
Even I
don't remember.
So while he's explaining that, he's showing that trick to Alfred's daughter. At the same time, we see a parallel scene where Alfred is interfering with Angier's trick on stage. Like, he's going to check the apparatus, and then he's going on the stage to find a version of Angier inside the tank.
So, his body falling into the tank. Yeah.
Yeah. So both scenes are being shown parallelly. Mm. And then we see Alfred in court and Cutter as a witness for the murder of Angier. And then, you know, he's in the jail, and then someone hands him the journal of Angier. And then he starts reading about Angier reading Alfred's journal.
Alfred's diary. Exactly. That's how he presents the story, which is very brilliant.
I also read that this story was written as a three-act screenplay. Like, the screenplay for the movie was a three-act. And I read that, and I tried to find these three acts, but I just could not find it.
Couldn't find it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very interesting because the movie is all about the three parts, right? The beginning of the trick.
First part, whatever it is, and then the turn and then the prestige, yeah.
Yeah, the turn and the prestige. For some reason, I can't remember the name of the first part. But yeah, so it was very interesting to know that he had made that into three as well. How many times you watched the movie?
I don't know. Maybe 5-6 times.
Okay.
At least.
Yeah, like, I think if I watch this movie again, I'll find more details.
More details, of course you would, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Christopher Nolan. Like, that's the thing with Christopher Nolan. Like, he, of course, like, this is a very complex story of, you know, it's a very complex.
The story is actually very simple, but the way it is presented is just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. The narrative is a little bit complicated because we have, you know, stories inside stories, and there's flashbacks. There's, you know, a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
But he has done a great job of presenting that as well. And the music, the soundtrack is something which I think it's very underappreciated. Yeah, casting, of course, like, casting is brilliant. Casting is on point. But I feel the music and the editing is something that's very underappreciated, but that's very common across all of Christopher Nolan's movies, because it's there's a lot happening every single time. Especially like when you look at, take a look at movies like Dark Knight, there's a lot happening like within a span of few minutes. Even in one particular scene, there's like two narratives playing. There's two parallel narratives going on. So yeah, it's just, it's a lot to take. Do you have a favorite line that you can think of from the movie?
One is when Alfred is saying this, the most disappointing trick is that there is no trick.
Right.
So when you think about it, it's really true. If there is no trick, it's very disappointing. There should be something. There should be something complex that is happening underneath.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, Angier's trick is that he is making a clone, which is using a machine which was built by Tesla. It's just science, and we don't like science. We are looking for some complex mind manipulation here, but that is not happening
right.
here.
Right.
Yeah. Or when Alfred says this to his daughter, the secret impresses no one. The trick you use for is everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, if you think about it, there are a lot of lines. At the end of the movie, when Alfred is about to be hanged, the guard asks him, do you have any last words? And he says, abracadabra.
Yep.
Then we see that he's hanged. But the very next scene, we see that Alfred is reappearing again in front of Angier. So this is his brother. Yep. Yeah. So a lot of lines in this movie.
That's very interesting about abracadabra, because you know that's something you say before you revealing the.
Yeah, but that was never used in the movie other than this particular scene.
Exactly. Abracadabra,
I think this was never used. Abracadabra. Yeah, only in this particular scene.
No, it was
scene,
never
right?
used.
Yeah, only in this particular scene.
Just this scene. So yeah, he says abracadabra, and right then we see the prestige.
Yeah, we see the prestige. We see, you know, how he's revealed. So we first see his ball bouncing towards Angier.
Yeah.
But this ball was used as a trick in the transporter man. So that is how he's appearing in front of Angier.
Yeah, man. There's so many details.
So many details. Details is what makes this movie. So if you have a keen eye, you would absolutely love this movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's one characteristic of Christopher Nolan's movies as well. There's a lot of tiny details.
Yeah.
But the problem is there's a lot going on. Like, we always miss these tiny details. Like, we have to watch it a lot of times.
Multiple times,
to see all the details. To catch all the details. So, yeah, that's very interesting. And yeah, he doesn't say abracadabra at any point. And finally, when he uses that word, then we are revealed. Then we are shown the prestige of the biggest trick of his life.
Yes,
like we don't really think of the character Fallon much, right? Like at that point, we see this guy.
Yeah, when I watched it for the first time, I never thought that Fallon would be Christian Bale. Yeah, I never thought that the makeup was so on point.
Here's something that I noticed when I watched it for the third time. They don't show Fallon's face a lot. Like a lot of the time, it's just Alfred's face that is shown. Like even when they are having a conversation, you'll just see the back of the head of Fallon, and then you'll see Alfred's
face.
He
doesn't talk
face.
Much either.
And yeah, he doesn't talk much either. He has very few, like he's there present throughout the screen, but his dialogue is very limited. And even when he talks, they just show the back of his head.
And whenever conversations start, Fallon just leaves the room. That also happens always.
Yeah, talking about Fallon leaving the room. I don't know if you remember this, but when Sarah tells Alfred that she's having a baby, the first thing that Alfred says is that we should have told Fallon.
We should have told Fallon because that's Fallon's baby actually.
Because it was
Fallon's baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would only realize if you are watching it for the second time. Otherwise, you wouldn't get it. You would think, why do you want to inform Fallon about this? It's your baby.
Yeah, man. Like it took them 5 years to develop the script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
Like that doesn't surprise me at this point.
Yeah, even doesn't surprise me at all. So I think this was actually inspired from a real story. So this the Chinese man, Chung Li, who does this goldfish bowl trick, right? So this was an actual person. Chung Li was a white, I don't know, British or American person who used this stage name Chung Li.
Right.
Yeah. So he appeared as an Asian man to cash in on the audience. So every time, so every time he performed something, he acted as an Asian man because Asian or Eastern men was associated with magic, right?
Right.
In those
but
periods.
He was actually an American.
He was actually an American or a British. I don't know. He was a white guy. Okay. But he, in his entire life, he appeared as a Chinese man and never spoke a word in English until his death.
Wow.
And his death was on stage when bullet catch trick went wrong.
Oh,
So
okay,
his last words were, "Oh God, I've been shot." That was his first and last English words that he ever spoke on stage.
Oh man, I did not know.
Yes, for 17 whole years, he never spoke English in public. He always acted as a Chinaman until his death.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was also that also happened on stage.
Damn, this is an adapted screenplay. Like, there's a novel called The Prestige. They made some changes to the novel. So I think they changed the climax. So there were some spiritual elements in the novel. So they omitted that. I don't think they had this
Tesla thing.
Scientific part.
That's
to
what
it.
I thought.
Talking about Tesla. So that's another topic that they've. So did you know that there was this rivalry between
Edison
Tesla
and Tesla
Edison
yes,
in real
yeah,
life?
Yeah.
So I did not know about that. Like, I knew there was a person called Nikola Tesla. And I know, of course, we all know about Thomas Edison. But I did not know a rivalry of such. But this was actually a big thing back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had heard that most of Edison have some, I don't know how much, but the number of patents that Edison have are in thousands. Okay. So most of these patents, you can't actually give Edison the full credit. There are a lot of people working under Edison. A lot of people working under
right.
Edison. There were a lot of people working under Edison whose ideas contributed to most of these scientific discoveries and patents. But yeah, everything, Edison
Right.
claims the full credit for everything. So I've known this.
Right. Yeah, I think Nikola Tesla contributed a lot, but he kind of became a nobody, like not exactly nobody, but credit. So he did not get the recognition he deserved. Yeah. So do you remember the first line of the movie? The very first line, like the opening line of the movie.
I assume it's, "Are you watching too closely" or something?
Yes.
Is it? Okay.
But it's, it is "Are you watching closely?" But what is shown on the screen is the hats. Hats
oh,
on the
yes,
mountain
yes,
side.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The cloned
There's
hats.
A lot of hats. Yeah, and then Christian Bale's voice, "Are you watching closely?" Which was very interesting because it was combining the two things, because Christian Bale had nothing to do with the hats or the mountainside or Colorado Springs. And then we get to see Michael Caine talking about the magic trick. And towards, like, in the end as well, then we go back to the same thing. Talking about the end, what did you think of the ending? Like, how sure are you of the ending? Was it ambiguous, or did you have a solid understanding of the ending?
Well, it isn't as ambiguous as Christopher Nolan's other movies. Compare his other movies, this isn't as ambiguous. He tried to give us a close on everything because he shows that the daughter ends up with the correct right Alfred, the right true
right.
father. He also shows that Angier, the final Angier, dies. Or that is how we
Right.
see it. And there aren't much things that are left open. I think everything is closed.
But when Alfred, the one who is left, he walks out of that room, of that basement.
Yeah.
We see a glass cabin. We see a glass box.
Yeah.
And then there's a version of Angier in there.
Yeah. But that's a dead body.
What did you think of that? Is that dead? Is that alive?
Well, it is shown that it's a dead body because there are a lot of such tanks. We see a lot of tanks.
Right.
So I thought that these are the tanks that they used after every trick.
Right.
So after every Angier's teleported man, we see these people transporting this tank to some other place. So that place is this basement. So
right.
This basement is used to store all of Angier's dead bodies. But we never get to see them until this point. So I think that is Angier's dead body.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's why Angier says this when Alfred says, "You know nothing of sacrifice." Angier says, "No, look around you. You haven't checked this place right." And Alfred says, "I don't care." Because if he had checked, he would have seen a dozen of, not just a dozen, I don't know how many, but a number of Angier's bodies around him.
Right.
Yeah. So,
right.
Yeah. So that's why I think those are just dead bodies.
That's a valid point. But when we see that it's just a few seconds that we get to see that that version of
body
Angier,
yes.
Yeah, whether that's dead or alive. But the eyes are open. Like I this time I paused that on that particular scene. The eyes are open. He's just looking ahead. There's no movement, but he's just looking ahead, and then the screen cuts to black, which was very interesting because I think Christopher Nolan had meant that meant that in a way that, you know, Angie was still alive and the rivalry maybe was still on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe not dead. Because that would make sense. Because towards the end, Alfred says that, like, when he has shot Angier, all you did was for nothing. Then he says something on the lines of, no, it wasn't. And then he talks on about something.
It was the expression on the face of audiences.
Yeah. That's yeah, what something on the lines of, yeah, expression on the face of the audience, right. So, yeah. So, what bothers me is that I don't see any point where Angier is trying to... Angier is creating a clone of himself in the end. Like,
while he's alive, yes.
Yeah, while he's alive. Because we see that he has just been delivered the machine and he's trying to keep that somewhere in the basement. And then we see the final scene where Alfred has shot Angier. So we don't see that he has enough time to create a clone. Or why would he create a clone? There's like, it doesn't make sense.
At no point he created two versions of himself. He explains that he understands the dangers of this machine. And that's why he was ready for the worst. And that's how he started keeping gun with him.
Right.
Whenever he tried this experiment. And he always killed the other one.
Right. So, yeah, it would make sense that, yeah, if that was a dead version, that was just a dead body. But, yeah, Nolan just wants to make it more confusing and make it as ambiguous as possible. So, he shows that and then he cuts into black. Talk about a suspenseful ending. So, that was very interesting. Yeah, so did you know that most of this was shot, like this, the entire movie is set in UK, right? It's set in Victorian England. But all of it was shot in the US. Like they did not create a lot of sets. So all of it was just actual places, just made some, just dressed up as the Victorian England era. But that would make sense because most of the stuff happened indoors. On the outside, most of the stuff is in...
Yes, happens in theaters and
in theaters and stuff. And Nolan being Nolan, he shot most of the stuff with handheld cameras and most in natural light. So I think it's a very fascinating film. Like I think it raises the question of how much would one devote themselves to the art or to their passion? Mm. Like how much would you go for your passion?
And passion is also given a lot of focus here. So
actually it's not passion.
Michael Caine,
let me correct.
Obsession.
It's an obsession. Yeah. It's
Yes, I get it. Yeah, that is exactly what I was going to say. So Michael Caine says at some point to Angier that obsession is a young man's game. And I'm not a young man, so I can't follow this path.
Yeah.
And Nikola Tesla also says what you have is obsession, young man, and I know that you wouldn't stop. And then Angier says to Tesla that, yeah, now that you understand obsession, you know, I would go to such depths for this.
Yeah, exactly. And
So obsession is also another important focus.
Yeah, obsession, and then there's secrecy and sacrifice. Keeping the secret, it's paramount for both of them.
Yeah.
Like for Alfred, like he has to keep his secrets, like even when his relationships are falling apart. He has committed his entire life to the craft, so he can't reveal that secret. I think so there's a scene when he realizes that his wife, Sarah, knows the secret. Mm. And then there's a scene where he tells Fallon about it. So he tells Fallon that she knows.
Yeah, she knows something is wrong. Yes.
I think she actually knows. She actually knows that these are two persons.
Mm-hmm. We never got a clear understanding about what she knows.
Yeah.
But it's also very ambiguous there. Yeah.
Like the best that we get is Alfred saying to Fallon that, you know, she knows. And then there's another scene where, like, after she has committed suicide, Olivia comes to Alfred and says that Sarah was going to speak to me before she died. Sarah said that she had something to tell me about you and you as in Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah was going to tell the secret to Olivia, but Olivia could not face Sarah. She couldn't bring herself to face Sarah, so
mm-hmm.
no one ever knew the truth.
Yeah, and at that point, Alfred says that I never loved Sarah. I've only loved you, which was also true.
Exactly.
That half of Alfred only loved Olivia. Sorry, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. Who is Olivia? That's true as well. But at that point, Olivia goes like, I think Olivia saying something on the lines of, it's inhuman
to
be that cold. Yeah. The secrecy that, you know, just covers their lives, like they can't escape from it. and the ultimate sacrifice of, you know, living just half a life. Living half a life was enough for the both of us.
Yes.
There were a lot of sacrifices, but it was just enough for the both of them.
Yes, it was worth it for them. But it was not enough for Olivia and Sarah.
Sarah,
he also says this.
Yeah, man.
It was enough for us, but it was not enough for them.
And in the end, one of the brothers, like one Alfred, had to die because of their obsession. Because one of their obsession. Because Fallon had warned Alfred not to go to
Andrew. He said that we are done. He said that we are retiring.
Yeah, we are done, and you should leave Angier out alone. Like you should, you shouldn't poke around. But one Alfred, one of the brothers, could not stand, could not wait to find out the secret. So much so that he had to go in, and that led to, him being
hanged. Yeah. But it's a good thing that the original father got out alive. At least that is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I was worried that since it's Christopher Nolan, I thought original father would die just to make it more sad. But original father, the girl's father got to live, which was nice. At least.
It was obsession everywhere. Obsession led to all the ruins. I think this is something that is mentioned throughout the movie as well. Like obsession won't lead you to a good thing. It will always end in misery. I think Cutter, Tesla, a couple of other characters repeat this line in one form or the other. Obsession will always lead to misery.
Yeah, misery reminds me of another line that Cutter says. So when when Angier's wife dies at the crematorium or the what is it called? Yeah, where they bury the body. No. At the
Angier's wife.
When they're burying Angier's wife, Cutter says, "I once knew a sailor man who was drowning, and he said." Right. Drowning was like going home.
Right.
So he was trying to make Angier feel okay. He was trying to calm Angier there.
Right.
But later when Cutter realizes that Angier have been killing himself over and over again for this trick, Cutter said, "Do you remember once I told you that the sailor man who was drowning, drowning said that it's like going home?"
Right.
I lied. It was a lie. So the sailor man had said that it was misery.
Yep. It was full of agony.
Yeah. Full of agony. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was agony, not misery. But misery reminded me of this line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of on the same lines as well. Like they always, it's mentioned throughout the movie, the dangers of, you know, being obsessed, the dangers of obsession. And even for Angier, like his fate is decided by his obsession. The same goes for Alfred. His fate is also as a result of their obsession. But it's obsession that drives the movie. It's obsession that drives their lives. Underneath all this, it's just two artists, two magicians who are obsessed with their work. That's all the movie is about. But Christopher Nolan being Nolan, he added a ton of stuff on top of
that.
A
lot of layers on it, yes.
He built a wonderful narrative, a very complex, sophisticated narrative over that. And then we have Prestige. And according to Sachin, one of the best movies.
It's the best
movie ever made.
Yeah.
Is it a 10 out of 10 movie for you?
Yeah, I think it's a perfect 10. I can't find out any minor mismatches anywhere in this movie. Usually you would be able to find out some missing things in a movie, but with Prestige I was not able to find out anything, not even nitpick, nothing. So very, very able to find out any problems with the movie.
Now that we talk about that, this is one question that I had towards the end, because in the end we see that Michael Caine is with Alfred's daughter, and then they're playing together, and then Alfred comes into the room and then takes her away. And Cutter doesn't seem surprised by seeing Alfred, even though he knows that he has been hanged. So what do you think about that scene? Like, how did Cutter know that there was a double? Like,
I think it was because I think right from the beginning of the movie, it's shown that Cutter, it was crystal clear that he was using a double.
Right.
A double, he could be using a twin. I think at some point he said a twin. I don't remember that. No, that was Angier. Angier at the very end says, a twin. That was such a simple trick or something.
Right.
Yeah, but I think to Cutter, it was very, very clear that he was just using a double.
Yeah.
He said it with such conviction that Alfred is using a double. So it
Yeah.
wasn't surprising, and that was on point itself.
Yeah, that makes sense because I remember, like, after the like both the daughter and Alfred are reunited, there's a scene where they show Cutter's face very clearly, and he's not surprised. He's just emotionless. He's just, there's no emotion, there's no surprise, there's no happiness. He's just as he
Thing
is.
is that Cutter is very old and very experienced engineer, right? So he knows all the tricks. To him, it was very clear that he's using a double.
Yeah.
It's just that the inexperienced Angier couldn't understand or couldn't believe that it was such a simple trick because it was so perfect.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know about the sacrifices that was happening underneath.
Exactly,
The
exactly.
sacrifices is, yeah, when Angier says that it's so simple, Alfred says that simple. How could you say that? Because it's not simple. Living half lives is not at all simple. It's, yeah.
Yeah, the trick is simple, but the
Yeah.
sacrifice that
Yes.
that takes
Makes the trick this good is
to pull off
a
that
lot.
trick is insane. And
Yes.
but we do these we do see the surprise when he Cutter finally meets Lord Caldlo.
Yeah, something like cold law or something. Yeah.
Yeah, Caldlo, something like that. But yeah, we see the surprise on his face when he's seeing when he sees Angier as Lord Caldlo. And then he says something on the lines of, "What have you done? What did you do?" or something like that.
Yeah. I saw your dead body. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't remember the first time I'm watching this movie, but if this was the first time, then I would be blown away because there's a lot of twists towards the end. Like, we see that Angier is not dead, which is a big surprise. And then we see that there's two of them, like, there's two of
Yeah.
Alfred. So, this is one of those movies that I wish I could watch again for the first time. It would be great if I could get that experience again, get relive that experience again. So Interstellar, Prestige are definitely two of the movies that I can think of that I wish I could watch it again for the first time. If we were to rank the Prestige as number one for you, can you name the rest of the top four? Like, if we were to take top five, so the number one would be the Prestige. So what are the rest of the four?
Yeah, second would be Predestination.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have seen this movie, Predestination.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So how did you like it?
Oh, it's one of those movies that I've totally lost my mind. Like, I understood most of the stuff about, yeah, I think,
Yeah.
yeah, it was pretty clear, but I did not see that coming. Like, it was completely, I was completely blown away by that movie. But I think it's very underrated. Like, not a lot of people
It
know
is
about
really,
Predestination.
not a lot of people know about the movie. I think if you
Yeah.
look at the rating also, IMDb, it's just 7.4. Rotten Tomatoes, 84% only.
Yeah. By the way, I learned that IMDb is not an accurate way to find out
Anyone
the
can
rating.
rate, right?
Yeah, it's very inaccurate. I don't know. I'm not sure how the rating system works, but
Yeah, I've heard in one of your initial podcasts, you said you depend a lot of IMDb, but on the second and third, you
Sachin has
corrected
been listening to the episode podcast. That's best proof for
it.
you.
Yes.
Thank you, Sachin. Yeah. So
Yeah.
I read that IMDb's ratings are not really reliable, but Letterboxd is much more reliable because there's actual people who watch the movie, talking about the movie. So I think
Yeah.
Letterboxd would be a better metric to look at. So second would be Predestination, which is another
Yeah.
fantastic movie. So anybody who's listening, if you haven't watched Predestination, make sure to check that out. So there, here's a fun fact for anyone who is listening. Sachin and I used to talk Hollywood movies when we were in school, because I used to watch Hollywood movies like very early. Like I think I don't remember the first time I'm watching it, but I remember watching it watching Hollywood movies when no one else was watching. And Sachin was one of the few persons that I could talk about these movies because nobody was interested in these. But Sachin was a
Yeah.
visionary
And
of
the
his
genre
time.
that we were watching were also very similar. It was
Yeah,
not
exactly.
romance or it was not boring. Okay, when I say boring, people would judge me for it. But yeah, it was not the mainstream movies. It was different.
Yeah,
Yeah, the kind
exactly.
of movies that we were into were similar back then. Also, back then also.
Yeah, that's true. We were watching a lot of crime thrillers. We were watching a lot of sci-fi. we were watching action movies. We were watching a lot of action movies as well.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, I remember back in school, like, you know, I used to bring up all these movies, and Sachin would have mostly seen most of them. And there were times when Sachin would bring up movies that I haven't seen. Among our on a peer group, I think we were the only ones who were talking about Hollywood movies.
Yeah, we were the few people who were talking about Hollywood back then. Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. But
I think after that, we might have influenced a lot of our friends to start watching a lot of these movies.
Yes, yes. I can remember one friend who has clearly mentioned that, you know.
Sujit.
Yeah, Sujit.
Sujit, I knew it.
Yeah, Sujit, if you're listening, you can thank us later. So yeah, he told me that our discussion was the reason he started watching these movies. But yeah, it was a time when everyone used to mock us. Everyone used to make fun of us.
People used to mock us for this.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I think I can't remember the movies that we used to discuss, but I'm pretty sure that those were thrillers and action stuff as well.
I think Matrix was one of them. Matrix was pretty famous.
Yeah, I was thinking of the same thing. Matrix was definitely one of them. Then there was some other. There was Terminator.
Yeah, yeah, definitely Predator. Terminator would be there. Yeah,
Terminator, Predator. Yeah, these are pretty mainstream action movies.
And we were allowed to. For all the people listening, we were allowed to. We were in hostel together, and we were allowed to watch TV, mostly only on Sundays. So Sunday afternoon, it was either MTV or one of these Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and I remember this very clearly, when we were watching like. We would have to put on a lot of struggle to make them to switch to a Hollywood movie.
Make them switch to Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah. And even when they did, no one liked dialogues. They just wanted to see action or
action
they wanted
movies,
to see some nudity.
Like story was, yeah. story was not something that question. Anyone was interested. Yes, yes.
Nope. No one was interested in dialogues. No one was interested in stories. As soon as there was dialogues for a few seconds, people wanted to change channels. People wanted to switch channels. They wanted to see action. They wanted to see, heroines. They wanted to see nudity. Yeah. They wanted to see sex scenes. That's all people wanted. I mean, like, we're not saying we did not want those, but like, we were watching other things as well. But yeah, it was a very fascinating time. We had to put in a lot of fight to make them.
Yeah, and only when we became seniors, we were able to do that. When we were juniors, we would simply watch whatever they were putting on the TV. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very fascinating time. Like, Sunday afternoons were movie afternoons, so movie time. It was a good time. I think like there were a lot of movies that we watched back then that I only understood those movies and I watched it again later because initially when I watched it, like we were young, we only saw the action stuff, we only saw the surface level things. But it's only when we watch again and again. I mean, the biggest example would be Prestige. Like the first time I watched, I just noticed I just saw a movie which was full of twist and there's a wonderful climax towards the end. But that's all I saw. But it's when you watch again and again that you see it's very layered. There's a lot going on. There's just, you know, the themes of obsession, secrecy, and sacrifice.
Yeah, minor details.
Minor details. There's tons of details.
Yeah, there are a lot of things to remember. Only when you're watching, you will understand that these things are also there. Because otherwise, they are so subtle, they're in the background. Only once we start discussing about them, we'll understand it's important.
Yeah, that's true. So, there's a scene where Angier has gotten pretty big. Like, he's putting grand performances in London. And he's still using a double, though. And there's this moment where Carter says that we are going too big, and like we shouldn't do that big because we don't do things that we can't control.
So he asks to stop the performance. Yeah.
Exactly, because the dupe that he's using, the double that he's using, Mr. Root, he's going out of control. So he's telling Angier to stop the show because we are going too big. We can't be publicly embarrassed. Because we don't do things that we can't control.
Yes, and Angier refuses to.
Yeah, Angier being Angier refuses to do that. And then we see that he breaks his leg and then he embarrasses himself and his show because, you know, Alfred being Alfred does all of that. So, yeah, I think that's one of my favorite lines. Like, we don't do things that we can't control.
We can't control, yeah. And yeah, again, because of experience, Michael Caine knows everything that should be done and that shouldn't be done. That shows his that also explains why he's in surprise when at the very end when he sees the double, he's in surprise. That explains
Yep,
why.
yep, yep. He knew all along. And yeah, that just speaks to the experience and the maturity of that characters. The character, like how wise he is. Yeah,
yes.
I think that's a brilliant line, especially in terms of magic.
Yes. Also, Michael Caine is the one who tells them about sacrifices in the first place. So Michael Caine is the one who is sending these Alfred and Angier to the Chinaman's magic show.
Right.
Yeah. So that is
Yeah,
where
that's true.
he starts to teach the sacrifice. So he already knows that magicians go to this extent to pull out these simple tricks. So he already is fully aware of the extent to which these people go.
Yep. And going back to the duality of our main character. So there's a scene where, like, after Sarah has died, there's a scene where Olivia and Alfred are sitting together. And then he kind of reveals the truth. He says that the truth is part of me loved you, part of me did not. Because, like, he's literally saying that there's two parts, but
he's so badly wants to talk his true feelings, but he just cannot reveal the trick.
When you watch it again, you see that, like, he is saying that so bluntly, but when you don't know the secret, it does not make
understand.
sense to you. You think that it's not literal. Like, he's saying that in a metaphorical way, like, part of me loved you, part of me did not. But it is very literal, because
literal, very literal. He's literally saying part of me loves me and the other half doesn't love you.
There's tons of details, the dialogue, the writing, like, there's a lot of foreshadowing towards, you know, what's happening, and I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, we were talking about your top five. You only named Peter
Well, I don't actually have a list. Maybe third, I would say Primer. Now, if you don't know Primer, it's a movie about time travel itself, and it's a very complicated movie. You'll have to watch it dozens of times, make notes and stuff. Only then you would understand the movie. But the very interesting thing about this movie is that the whole budget for this movie is just $7,000 in 2014.
7,000?
Yeah. Sorry, 24. It's 2004.
Okay.
In 2004, this movie was made with only $7,000.
Wow.
So So that is another
Primer.
Very interesting, very complicated movie. Yeah, PRIMER.
Okay, I've never heard of the movie. Okay, that's
it's a very low budget. It was released as a very low budget movie by, majorly by this guy Shane Carruth, who is the director as well as the screenplay writer. He's also the guy who acted in this one. Yeah, he's the director, screenplay writer, and the actor.
Wow. Yeah, I do need to watch it. So there's this movie called Donnie Darko. I'm not sure if you watched it.
Yeah, I've seen this guy's. Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal, yeah.
Yeah, have you seen that
seen
movie?
This one, yeah. Yes.
What did you think of that movie?
I like watching these kind of movies, but specific ending to these movies, right? It's like, it's nice to watch, but since there is no closure, you always feel like something is missing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Donnie Darko is one of those movies that I watched, you know, for its entirety. And then I was like, you know, what the hell just happened? Because I could not wrap my head around it. Like, I could not understand what was going on. And there's another one called Mulholland Drive. I don't know if you watched it.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's also a kind of similar movie, which doesn't have a proper ending.
Yeah.
I was just trying to... That's a movie about two actors, right? Two girls.
Yeah, two actresses.
Yeah.
I was reading this article the other day. And so there's this director. His name is David Lynch. So he's the director of Mulholland Drive. So I'm not sure if Donnie Darko is also his movie. But I'm pretty sure that Mulholland Drive is his movie. So the idea is not to try and understand the ending. The idea is to enjoy and, you know, just go with the flow of how it's going. I think I read that on some article, but for me, like, I need to understand, the story, or else I can't sleep. So
exactly. So I also used to watch a lot of Mulholland Drive and the Donnie Darko one. I used to watch a lot of review videos to understand it, watch a lot of read a lot of articles about these movies, but yeah, no one had a definite answer to how why the movie ends the way it ends. So
Right.
yeah, but yeah, watching is good. It's a good experience to watch it, but yeah, it deprives you of your sleep.
That's true. So I think your personal top genre would be time travel, sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi and
sci-fi.
Yeah, thrillers and these kind of movies. So
Okay.
another great movie is Nightcrawler. Also,
Nightcrawler.
yeah,
Amazing.
I like this movie Truman Show and a lot of his movies also.
Oh, Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey's movies, yeah.
Yeah, Jim Carrey is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Truman Show is definitely a masterpiece. I've seen that only once, so I need to watch that again because it's definitely a masterpiece. Yeah, like the first time I watched, I remember being mind blown.
Yeah.
I mean, these movies speak a lot about the societies that, you know, the time back then, because I think Truman Show was released in 2004 or sometime over there. So yeah, it was a time when, you know, reality shows and all that stuff was, you know, big thing, and Truman Show kind of shows that.
It was released in 1998. So yeah, when we were born.
1998. Yeah. Okay, makes sense. Truman Show. Yeah, there's a lot of movies. These are movies I definitely need to go back and watch again, because I feel like there's a lot that you can learn from these movies. Especially movies like Truman Show, like those are like all time
Truman Show is also
classics.
A two or three time watch movie, because many details, you would only understand the meaning of many details after, when you watch it for a second time. Only when you understand that, for the people who haven't watched Truman Show, spoiler alert, only when you understand that it's a simulation, you would understand why these details are put in different parts of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan. Again, I think all of his movies are filled with ton of details. I think, but with Tenet, I think it went a little too far, because I was watching Tenet and I was keeping my mind so sharp. I was very focused. I was very focused towards the point where there's a scene where there's this mirror switch. Like there's this you see the
people go backwards and people go
forward, one started going backwards and one started going forward. I lost at that point. Like I lost track of everything from that point. So yeah, I think with Tenet he went a little too far.
Good that we are on the same page on that,
because all the other movies of Christopher Nolan that I've watched, I can explain, like Inception, Interstellar, Dark Knight. It took me a couple of attempts, but I can explain most of them.
Yeah.
But with Tenet, it's close to impossible. Like I cannot wrap my head around it, because there's a lot going on, and it's a different order. It's a different timings. There's a lot.
I think it was so confusing to a point that I couldn't enjoy the movie that much. You know, you hate things that you don't understand. That is also a saying, right? People hate the things that they don't understand. Yeah, that is what happened with Tenet for me.
You hate things what you don't understand. You fear things that you don't understand.
Yeah, I think that's also out of a movie. I can't place it. Which movie though?
It's out of Batman. It's out of Batman Begins.
Oh.
Yeah, you fear what you don't understand. You always fear what you don't understand.
But what is it about?
So,
which
Falcone. Falcone and Batman Falcone and Bruce Wayne are having a conversation, like in his place, in Falcone's place. So he has come to kill, I don't know, I think they're facing each other for the first time, like Bruce Wayne and Falcone are having a conversation face to face for the first time, and then Falcone starts talking about the power of fear, and then he says this: you always fear what you don't understand.
Yeah. So it's in it is actually in, I've just looked it up. It's in Batman Begins as well as Man of Steel. But I think I got it from Man of Steel. In Man of Steel, I think Superman's the father who is raising him, the person who is raising Superman, in the human who is raising Superman, he says this to Clark, the young Clark.
Makes sense.
I think Clark asks his father, why do I have to keep these powers a secret? Then his father explains, people always fear what they don't understand. Yeah, but like you said, it's It is there in Batman Begins also, and also Man of Steel. But I got it from Man of Steel.
Yeah, and I think in Batman Begins, the lines or something on the lines of.
Yes, same thing. Saying Falcone, I'm listening to it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Falcone says it to Bruce Wayne, not Batman, Bruce Wayne.
But to Bruce Wayne, like you can't come into this world. This is a world you don't understand, and you always fear what you don't understand. We'll need to do another episode on Batman trilogy. So yeah, I think this was wonderful. Thank you so much, Sachin, for taking out the time to be a part of the show. I hope to have you again on the show because we need to talk about Batman trilogy. I know you are a big fan of Batman trilogy. I think you introduced me to Batman trilogy because you used to talk about Batman Begins a lot back in the day.
So that was different from a typical superhero movie. So that is what got me interested in that movie. So I whenever Dark Knight used to I used to watch Dark Knight. I think I was very little when I watched Dark Knight for the first time, and I didn't like it because I was expecting a typical superhero movie, and this was just a too realistic. This was too realistic, and I didn't like it. But only when I grew up, I started understanding how great a movie that is. Dark
Yeah,
Knight.
that is true.
Yeah. Even day before yesterday, me and my friend, we were watching Dark
Oh,
Knight.
yeah. Dark Knight is one of those movies I can watch again and again and again. Like, I would never get tired of Dark Knight. So, yeah, I think this was wonderful.
Yes. Thank you, Joseph, for calling me for this. It was really fun. It was really fun. And I wouldn't have liked it if I started off with some other movie other than Prestige. So it was good that, this was reserved for me. Yeah. Good
Amazing.
thing that no one else took it.
Let's thank the rest of the people that have
Yeah,
showed up
there's other
here for
people
not
too.
choosing
This
Prestige.
one.
Yeah, we'll definitely do another one for Batman trilogy. So, yeah, this is Sachin. I'm Joe, and this is Hold My DVD, and I'll see you in the next one.